Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast on this Tuesday, November 26th, 2019, and we got a lot of wrestling to get to. Survivor Series, Monday Night Raw, big heel turn, and a lot to cover. I'm going to give you my thoughts on the matches, as well as really the number one story coming out of Monday Night Raw in the Seth Rollins heel turn, and some thoughts on that. I'm mostly positive. And I didn't think I would say that, but so we're going to get to that. But as always, I want to thank you guys for joining me. This is a live show. There is no safety net for me today, so there's no stopping and pausing, of which you guys don't get to hear a lot of times because obviously it's pre-edited. But thank you so much for joining me as we roll through Survivor Series. We get to Monday Night Raw, and you guys, just so you know, can get an ad-free experience on patreon.com/WWE podcast. And on there, you can get an ad-free experience with tons of other content and a shout out on the show. You can even come on the show and do a podcast with me. So one thing about the website. So I get this notification and today that WordPress said, oh, there's some security flaw with the theme that you chose for your website. And I had it custom made. And so it just took the custom website and took the theme and just got rid of it. And said, until you repair the theme, we can't use the theme. So I don't know a damn thing about coding. I'm not very good at it. And so I am working on getting some kind of semblance of a website. There is something there now on WWEpodcast.com. It's just a hold me over until I get with the format that I had back. So if you're on the website and you're like, what is going on? Well, apparently WordPress did a scan of my website and said, oh, there's some kind of flaw in the theme, of which not even my theme. It was a theme that WordPress originally approved and then said, oh, something's not right. So anyway, with that good news, I want to also let you guys know that this podcast is available everywhere that you can think of. And we are teetering on every week, teetering on the top 10 wrestling podcasts on iTunes. And sometimes we reach, number 12, number 13, 11, and we are so close to number 10, and it's just a matter of time, and I want to thank you guys for that. So thank you so much. So since this is a live show, you guys can call in at 516-531-9619, and then you got to press 1 on your phone to get into line to actually know that you want to come on the show. So if you're listening to us live and you want to be in standby mode, that's cool. You don't have to do anything. But if you want to get on the show, you just have to press 1 on your phone, and you'll be able to get on the air, and we can discuss anything that you like to regarding Survivor Series and or Monday Night Raw. So lots of cool things to discuss. And speaking of things to discuss, I think I have to start out with the Seth Rollins heel turn. It's fresh on my mind. It's the latest thing that happened, and it just makes sense to start there. I know it's not in exactly sequential order of things that happened, obviously, with Survivor Series two nights ago and the Monday Night Raw last night, but let me just say this about Seth Rollins' heel turn. How much better is he as a heel? Number one, Seth Rollins is a born and bred heel. From his voice, which I think is tailor-made to a heel. Yes, his wrestling style is a little bit more babyface, although everyone seems to be wrestling that style nowadays. But his look, he screams heel. The way that he carries himself, I think, is heel. And now you just put him back into the heel role of, and I think it was done beautifully, coming out on Monday Night Raw and trying to be the locker room leader and really not taking any of the blame himself, rather pointing it to all the other guys and gals and saying, "You all screwed up. I want to make this a better show. This is on you guys. You guys sucked last night." And I think that was the way to go, because Seth is viewed as a locker room leader. And it is something that Seth has said before, that he is a guy that is, that he lives and breathes this business. And that is true. So there's a lot of truth to that. And this wasn't a really forced heel turn. I think this is one that, again, this was my second choice for Seth Rollins. My first, if you listen to my show, my first choice was to have Seth actually just take some time off. Just go away for 2 months, come back as a surprise entrant in the Rumble, and then see if you can pick up the pieces of the babyface run, which I think they could have, because all of this, all of the things that have worked against Seth during this babyface run would have been rectified simply by time, simply by the fans saying, "Hey, we just need a break from you. You have gotten the shaft in terms of storyline. You have gotten the short end of the stick. You haven't had great on-screen chemistry with Becky. We don't really know who and what you are." And Kevin Owens pointed that out pretty nicely on Monday Night Raw. I enjoyed that because it was a lot of truth there. And Kevin Owens saying that, and I think he's the perfect yin to yang of Seth Rollins, because Kevin Owens is a guy that is a lot like Daniel Bryan, a guy that the fans organically gravitate to, a guy that you feel knows who he is, and he said that, and we do agree with that, that you don't feel as if Kevin Owens is phony. And Kevin Owens pointing out that Seth is acting like a guy that he feels the company looks at him and feels like he should be, rather than just being who he is. A lot of truth to that. That promo that Kevin Owens cut, that was a lot of truth right there. That screamed a lot of truth. Of course, it was pre-discussed. We know that. But there are some interviews, some promos, that when they happen, you go, that there's a lot of real things that were just said there. There's a lot of real elements to that promo. And in this case, I think Kevin Owens' promo that he cut on Seth Rollins was indeed based in a lot of truth. And I enjoyed that. I think that was a very telling promo, one that I think the fans vicariously lived through. I know I did, and a lot of the things that he said, that, you know, you don't know who you are. I've never wavered on who I am. I've never pretended to be anything that I never felt like I was. So there's a lot of truth to that, and I enjoyed that. I enjoyed what Kevin Owens had to say, and obviously their match at the end with the Authors of Pain, Eric, Razor, and I can't think of the other name for just the life of me right now, but see, no safety net. I would have edited that out, but the Authors of Pain came out, and they, I think, will be an awesome fit with Seth Rollins. I really think they need a leader. They can be the heavy hitters for Seth Rollins doing his dirty work. The logic there is that, you know, we were called out by Seth. I'm saying the logic for why they didn't attack Seth is because they were called out by Seth at the beginning of the show in the town hall. But at the same time, they realized, we need to make an impact. We need to, you know, we stand up. We fight for what you fight for. You know, you lit a fire in us. There's reasons for this, you know. So I think that could be an awesome pairing. If you're a heel, having heaters and guys that will take the beatings for you and do the dirty work is, I think, it's just par for the course. That's just what heels do. And that's what good heels do. And I think Seth leading that group, that's an interesting pairing that I never considered. I really didn't. I never considered Seth Rollins with them. And I think it could be a really, really interesting long-term pairing as Seth runs roughshod as a heel. Now, again, do I think that this was the best course of action? Time will tell. I don't think it's an awful decision. I think the worst decision that WWE could have made for the Seth Rollins character at this point was to stay the course. And they didn't. They decided to go with the heel road. And I'm fine with that because I'm more encouraged by what I saw on Monday than I thought I would be had they just decided to turn him heel. And it's interesting, though, when you think about all the heel turns that WWE has done, all the people that you never thought WWE would turn heel, all the people that WWE turned heel because of the rejection of the audience, all the people that WWE turned heel when they shouldn't have, and yet Roman Reigns remains immune. He is the one guy that they just refuse. Daniel Bryan turned heel. Bayley turned heel. Seth Rollins, after beating Braun Strowman, after beating Triple H, after beating Brock Lesnar twice, what did they do? Heel. Roman Reigns is in this bubble of immunity. And I don't want to get on a Roman Reigns rant, but the reason I'm not going to is because, well, the fact is I have a lot of those coming down the line from what I'm understanding about the future creative of WWE, where they are looking at the Fiend versus Roman Reigns down the line. Roman is soon to be back in the title picture. And I think soon to be back where he was in terms of the crowd reaction. I think that all of this goodwill, all of this progress WWE has made, I believe, will get undone the second the strap gets put back on Roman Reigns. I really believe that. And you can mention, well, he hasn't been the focus of WWE. He hasn't been the focus. He hasn't been champion. You don't have to be champion to be the focus of WWE. Again, look at their booking of Roman Reigns. He's on the cover of WWE 2K20. Ironically, one of the most buggy games in the history of the 2K series. He is on every promotion. He's on every charity that's done. He's a spokesman. Especially the cancer, cure cancer, especially now that is, he can relate to that. He is the perfect candidate for that. He is the beginning and end of a show. He is the sole survivor for the SmackDown team. So don't give me, well, he hasn't been the focus of WWE. That's why the fans have, you know, started to come around to him. No. At least the fans that understand what's happening, it's all about positioning. Not always who has the belts. It's about who starts the show and who ends the show. And Roman Reigns, even during the time that he has not held any major championships, has always been the focal point of the show. Look at what they did with Roman Reigns during the Kofi Kingston era. They made him the whodunit angle. He would close out SmackDown, watching, you know, those boxes get tossed on him for the 400th time. They would make sure that Roman Reigns was standing tall at the end of the show, or that he was the lasting image. So those of you that, again, think Roman Reigns was not the focus, you may want to look again, because he has been. And WWE believes that the focus, or the perception from fans, will be that he hasn't held the belt, so he's not the focus. But WWE has never really valued the championships more than they have valued certain stars and their positioning and their overall star value that they perceive that that person has over the championships. It's been proven again and again. So don't worry. Roman Reigns rants, if you guys have missed those, are coming down the line. They're coming. And I feel it. And I will preface it all by saying I think he's an amazing athlete. I think he is obviously a good person. He's a good family guy. He's, you know, the quiet but strong type, right? Silent and strong, and he's, you know, the cool guy. And he's got great hair and steel blue eyes, and he's a great athlete. All that kind of wonderful thing, all those wonderful things, and all they have to do is turn the man heel, and it just is an impossibility. It's this roadblock from WWE, and I don't know why. I just don't know. They will turn anyone else. And I'm talking about anyone. Nobody's off the table now. So, all right. Well, enough of that that bit of a mini Roman rant. It's not even a rant. It's just it's like an appetizer to a rant. That's how I view that particular segment here. So, moving on here. So Survivor Series itself. Let's talk about it before we get into Monday Night Raw. Survivor Series, as I go by the matches here, let me just go through them. On the kickoff show, you had the Viking Raiders defeat the Undisputed Era via pinfall. Surprising there. I think that the Viking Raiders were probably the underdog to win this, and maybe that's the reason. And this is, sadly, Raw's only victory for the night. I predicted an NXT sweep and got pretty close. I got pretty close to this, and having the Viking Raiders on the pre-show with the Undisputed Era and New Day really, I think, unfortunately speaks volumes to where the Viking Raiders and, honestly, the tag team championships in general stand in the minds of WWE. And it's unfortunate that they get kicked to put on the kickoff show. But so the Viking Raiders, they won here, and they won as Eric and Ivar combined for a Viking experience that saw O'Reilly slam onto Fish, and Ivar recorded the pinfall. So it was an okay match. I didn't have a whole lot to say about it. It was your standard match. It wasn't particularly long. I have nothing negative to say about it. It was just kind of a ho-hum, I think, win for the Viking Raiders. Although, you could make a case that they needed this win more than anyone, and you can make that case. I think the Viking Raiders, especially pinning the Undisputed Era, was interesting rather than having the New Day take the pinfall. So that was interesting. I don't have a whole lot to say about it because outside of this, Raw had nothing to show for itself in terms of victories. But don't worry, we'll all forget about this next week. After we move on to TLC, none of this matters, and the brand warfare just goes up in thin air. It's absolutely amazing. Before I move on, I just want to let you guys know, if you would like to call in, you can do so at 516-531-9619. And if you call that, you just press 1, and you can get into the calling queue, and I'll know that you want to get on the air. If no callers want to get on the air and just stay in a listen-only mode, that's totally fine. But the offer is there. Again, 516-531-9619, and then press 1. All right, let's move on here to the Women's Survivor Series. It was Rhea Ripley defeating Sasha Banks via pinfall as NXT, which is Ripley, Candice LeRae, and Io Shirai, survive. So, interestingly, again, I enjoyed this match more than I thought I would, but NXT was positioned as the babyface throughout the entire night. NXT were the babyfaces as a brand. They were, because they're the cool brand, they feel like an anti-brand within WWE's own umbrella. It's a very interesting dynamic. And having NXT positioned in a way that is trying to frame them as heels by having Candice LeRae and Io Shirai fake an injury which is what heels do, was interesting that they, I don't understand the reasoning for it. I really don't. I just have no understanding as to why they would have done that to fake an injury. Because what if their team got suddenly eliminated and they weren't able to run out in time? I don't understand the reasoning for this. I seriously don't. I mean, I could see that if they faked an injury on the outside and stood in ringside and pretended to be hurt, but they went in the back. I mean, I don't know. It was kind of that's really the only negative I have to say about this. Otherwise, the real star that came out of this was Rhea Ripley. Clearly, Rhea Ripley is and continues to be a star here. Having it come down to Sasha Banks and herself, I think was a really good ending. It really also cemented Sasha as a big time player too. And she needs it. She needs a little bit of momentum behind her herself. I mean, Sasha Banks has been a little bit lost in the fray since coming back, turning heel, getting super hot, and then kind of fades away. And that's just kind of the unfortunate, or fortunately, more often than not, WWE's formula of a follow-up is turn him heel and the rest will just happen. Well, no, the rest just doesn't happen, and you need to keep the momentum going. Of course, easier said than done. But nonetheless, Rhea Ripley comes out here as the star. And I think that Nikki Cross also had a pretty good showing. She ended up, laying a lot of the women out. Tony Storm, I think, could have done a little bit. I don't know. With Tony Storm and the things that I saw she did, the Mae Young Classic, I was a little bit disappointed with, given that, we didn't see that version of Tony Storm, but I understand that there's 10 women here and that eliminations need to come in untraditional ways. And Tony Storm was not going to get the 20 minutes that she would get in a singles match, and I get it. But anyway, so it was, I think, a very good match. It was just an unnecessary heel turn, I think, for NXT. No need for it. I don't think there was any need for that at all. It didn't do anything for me. It was a bit confusing. So, great match. I enjoyed this really, really a lot. All right. Then we got Roderick Strong, Shinsuke Nakamura, and AJ Styles. So, Roderick Strong defeated Shinsuke Nakamura via pinfall. So, this match didn't get a whole lot of attention. And it was one of those matches that were sleeper matches, I think. That you looked at this on paper and said, wow, this could really be something if given the time and, if given a proper build. And I think that this was a good match, very good match, actually, and would be in my top three of the night in terms of quality. The big spots, I think, were really fun. And you had Nakamura rally late with a Kinshasa on Roderick Strong. Styles dove in and saved the pin. It was a lot of fun. And I think that the interaction between Styles and Nakamura didn't feel as special as it once did when they faced each other at WrestleMania. But, they have a long history. They still work very well together. And the biggest match that Nakamura's been in, and honestly, probably since he faced AJ Styles at WrestleMania, this was the biggest match that Nakamura has been in. And that is it's an unfortunate thing, but I think the unsung hero is for Nakamura is Sami Zayn. And what Sami Zayn does when Nakamura comes out is absolutely hilarious. Going way over the top, dancing like a maniac, pointing to Nakamura. The obnoxiousness is almost charming from Sami Zayn. It's awesome. I love Sami Zayn's pairing with Nakamura. It's more than I thought it could be, and I thought that this was underrated to begin with, but now seeing it flesh itself out a little bit longer, I hope that this is a duo that just continues, because Sami Zayn really adds a lot to Nakamura. He really does. But as far as Nakamura in the ring, I mean, he's an absolute professional in the ring, and this was a match that I think lived up to and exceeded expectations. I really believe that. And Roderick Strong winning, I think, was the... I think it was the right move, and the championships weren't on the line. So it's not like Shinsuke lost anything. People will forget that Shinsuke lost and move on to the next thing on SmackDown on Friday. So I had no problem with Roderick Strong winning. I think, it was the right move and continues NXT's momentum. Then we had Adam Cole defeat Pete Dunne. This was awesome. Probably the match of the night. How many near falls? It almost looked like there was a pile driver or two in the match. I don't even know the name of the damn move, but there were some moves that I said, ooh, that's kind of a pile driver. And I know that those are banned, so I don't know what that was, but the crowd was chanting, you know what? And Pete Dunne and Adam Cole just, I think, tore the house down. And it was a classic. And I think it really showcased what the NXT brand is about. And that's kick-ass wrestling. That's at the core of what NXT is. And they certainly showed it during this match. The amount of near falls was just, again, it was brilliant. And again, it really solidified the brand here and really brought the crowd to their feet. And Pete Dunne, you can't say enough about him carrying his load. And if they put this match on pay-per-view again, I would buy the pay-per-view to see it. They were that good, I believed. And Adam Cole obviously is just brilliant as well in the ring. So bravo to both men. And I think it's just a showing. This was a showcase for NXT. This was awesome. Then we had The Fiend versus Daniel Bryan. So The Fiend beat Daniel Bryan, as many expected. So, was this as bad as Hell in a Cell? The answer is no. Did this feel special? The answer is also no. So what could WWE have done to improve this? The answer? I don't know. Because The Fiend, with all the damage that has been done, I don't think fares well from long matches. They need to find something for The Fiend, some kind of different way that The Fiend wrestles or ends his matches quickly. And I know that Brock Lesnar already fills that position of ending matches quickly in record time. But The Fiend needs something. The Fiend needs something extra. He's an attraction, which means I don't need to see him a lot, and nor do I need to see him for a long time when he does show up. And when I mean a long time, I don't need his matches to go more than 5 minutes. And less is more with this character. That's when it felt awesome. How long were we just craving and salivating for The Fiend to come back? I mean, or when he finally debuted, you said, oh my God, and he attacked countless legends and attacked Braun Strowman, which we all forget, but he did. So there was never any follow-up to that. And Braun just, I guess, chalked it up to, that was a bad dream. I mean, I don't know. That was just forgotten. But I think the key here is, if I was going to put a suggestion out there and had a gun in my head, that the solution in part may be to have The Fiend only show up every couple of months. Yeah, I said a couple months. And yes, he's champion. He's the Universal Champion. And we don't want an absentee champion. It reminds us of Brock. A lot of the things that the fans became resentful of Brock for was the fact that he was barely there. But I think in this case, The Fiend is the hottest thing WWE's had in years. It's the most interesting character they've had in years. And I think at this point, the fans would look at this as, well, it's, you know, this isn't Brock. We haven't given Bray Wyatt a chance with the championship yet. Let's see what he can do. It makes it mean a whole lot more when he's there, instead of just expecting him to be there every week. I don't even need the Firefly Funhouse every week. As awesome as that is and as entertaining as that is, it's all about the law of diminishing returns. That's what this is about with Bray Wyatt. And so with this match, again, with The Fiend and Daniel Bryan, I think Daniel Bryan did what he could. And I mean, he did what he could with a standard wrestling match. And what was interesting was that Daniel Bryan started the yes chant again for the first time. And the fans were right behind him. So Daniel Bryan in the ring, I think, saved this match. Not that Bray Wyatt's a bad wrestler, in quotes, but he, with this character, I don't need to see a whole bunch of no selling. I just don't need to see it. And when Daniel Bryan was kicking him in the head repeatedly and Bray Wyatt was just popping back up, that's the thing that starts to become resentful. It reminds us back to the Hell in a Cell match. I think a better way, instead of popping back up, would be that he continues to slowly crawl back up as if you just can't kill him. Instead of no-selling it, you act as if he's a monster that you can put him down, but he just continues to slowly get up. When you pop back up, that takes a whole nother level of unbelievability, even to the hardened wrestling fan. I've been watching wrestling for 22 years, and I just, when I see that, I go, it's a little bit Undertaker, but excess of Undertaker for a guy that's not the Undertaker. I need him to be the monster that just continues to just, you just can't put him down. He continues to, here's the key word, slowly crawl up. He will not go down, not pop back up and no sell. There is a huge difference. It doesn't sound like a difference, but just imagine that in your brain. Don't, imagine that it's a slow get up. He's a true monster just ascending again, and you just can't kill him. So I think I've made my point. But this match, I think, was okay. It was again, a step in the right direction from Hell in a Cell, although Hell in a Cell set a pretty low bar. Bryan ended up succumbing to the mandible claw, and Wyatt retains. So there's not much more to say about that. Moving on. All right. Then we had the men's Survivor Series elimination match with the 5-on-5-on-5-on-5-on-5-on-5 on Infinity. And it ended up being, of course, as I said, Roman Reigns defeating Keith Lee via pinfall. So Roman Reigns is the sole survivor. Let's get ready for the Roman Reigns reboot. That's what this signaled. Those of you that think that WrestleMania wasn't the end game here, or wasn't thought about with this victory, you have another thing coming. Roman Reigns and The Fiend are on a collision course, and I believe it's at WrestleMania 36. So this was the beginning of a signal, and a flag of Roman Reigns being resurrected to that level. So just keep that in mind as we move along in time here. All right. But the other thing is here. So one thing outside of that critique, the other critique I would say is just the ease in which some people get eliminated. And this goes for the women and the men's matches. The ease in which people get eliminated. I tweeted this out. Braun Strowman via countout. Although Braun Strowman via countout, that's creative, because Braun Strowman what happened to him? Did he get an RKO or something on the outside? Somebody hit him with a spear. No, Roman Reigns. I'm sorry. I'm reading the results, but I know that Braun Strowman was out there for a reason and was incapacitated for a good reason, and that made sense. The things that didn't make sense: Randy Orton getting DDT or rolled up and getting pinned. Yeah, Roman Reigns Randy Orton doing that, and then I'd say the one highlight of that though was Matt Riddle and Randy Orton. Randy Orton, after getting pinned by Matt Riddle, RKO'd Riddle, and he got eliminated. So I think that could be a very interesting matchup as well. So just some of the ease in which things were, people were eliminated was, I don't know, a little bit much for me, but nonetheless. All right, so this ended with, I think, a hell of a showing for Keith Lee, which I think people, and I didn't see coming, would be the focal point of NXT and not Tommaso Ciampa or, Matt Riddle. It was Keith Lee really solidifying himself as an NXT player and a big time player. And I loved it. I loved Keith Lee's look, his athleticism. I think that he felt like he belonged. He didn't feel like he was part of a third brand that was just there as the, you know, the third wheel per se. He felt like he belonged. He was hard hitting. He was engaging. I love the way that they booked him. It was very well done. So there's some praise there. I love the way Keith Lee was booked. Would I have had Keith Lee win? Maybe, probably. I probably would have, and maybe pin Seth Rollins, and that way Roman Reigns is out of the picture. You can, you know, save face with him and have Keith Lee win. The crowd would have loved it as they crapped all over Seth Rollins all night in Chicago. If you didn't know where they were, WWE makes sure that they let you know where they are in a big market with every single promo mentioning the city. You know, when they're in Nashville next week, or in, you know, a much lesser non-NFL town, look out. You won't even know that where they are. There might be a quick badge at the top right of your screen of the, you know, where they are that week. But anytime WWE is in a small market, you will never know it. You'll never be notified of where they are. It's amazingly, and it's so small of them to do. I'm not a fan of when they're ashamed of where they are, it seems like at times. Anyway, so I also enjoyed, outside of Keith Lee, Corbin, believe it or not. And, Corbin, who I think had a good showing, was one of the final few up until Roman Reigns speared him. I hope that does not lead, God please, to another Roman Reigns Baron Corbin match, program. And it's a weird thing with Baron Corbin. He's a confusing character to figure out because he can talk good on the mic. He's got good height that Vince loves. He is a good talker. He's a good heel. This king thing is, again, tailor-made for a heel, and he's picking it up nicely and running with it. But when I see Baron Corbin, I just feel I'm bored, but I dislike him. And it's a weird mix of feelings that I have. Like, I want to see, you know, I want to see someone beat him up, but I'm not clamoring for it. I just go, that's Baron Corbin. Someone will come out and shut him up. Maybe it's just the lack of build of heat for him, but he's got kind of go away heat, but boring heat, but he's good. It's very weird. Maybe you guys know what I'm talking about. Baron Corbin he's good, but he's boring. But yet he's a good heel that I don't particularly care so much if someone comes and beats him up. It's very weird, but I think he's an asset. I just think he hasn't put it all together yet. Maybe that's what it is. All right. WWE Championship match with Brock Lesnar defeating Rey Mysterio. As we, you know, all I think felt, Brock beat Rey Mysterio. And I will say that I was in the minority of wanting to see Rey Mysterio and Dominic get train wrecked. I wanted to see them get absolutely massacred. I did. I wanted to see them get beat within an inch of their life. Again, in storyline, folks, not in real life. And when we had Dominic come out, again, I think myself and many others called that Dominic would interfere here, and he did. And ends up giving Brock a low blow, and then Rey gives him a low blow. Actually, it was reversed. Rey, then Dominic did. And then Dominic gives him a tandem 619 and gives him a frog splash as Rey gives him a frog splash. I think the match was booked well. I will say that. I think the match was booked well, but I just can't stomach Dominic and Rey. There's something about me that lives vicariously through Brock Lesnar when he beats the holy hell out of Dominic. And I'm surprised that he only got a German suplex from Brock and he didn't come back in and just, you know, wail on him with like six F5s or something. I was very disappointed that Brock just took his balls, literally, and went home after he defeated Rey Mysterio with an F5 and called it a day. I was very disappointed he only hit one German suplex. I wanted to see Dominic get absolutely manhandled. That's just something wrong in my brain, but I have no apologies for it. I wanted to see Rey and Dominic get dismantled. I was clamoring for it. I was saying, please, please let this happen. But it didn't. Brock wins, and I don't know. I was happy that Brock won, but I wanted more violence from Brock on Rey and Dominic. So, all right. Then we got the triple threat. NXT Shayna Baszler defeating Bayley via submission, as Becky Lynch was also involved in this triple threat. And this match was a bit underwhelming, per se. I wasn't crazy about this match. Maybe because all three haven't been on a big stage in this format before, or also the Chicago crowd was just exhausted and drained of energy by this point. And they simply just, I don't think, had a great match. Again, it was okay. And having Shayna Baszler defeat Bayley was the call that I made and Ashley made, my co-host last week. And I think it's the right call. I think it's the right call to have Shayna Baszler defeat Bayley. It protects Becky Lynch, who is the face, one of the biggest baby faces WWE has. And it doesn't hurt Bayley because, well, she, you know, it'll all be forgotten. She'll go to Heat back on Friday night and Shayna will go back to her world. But getting the recognition from Shayna Baszler was, I think, good. Also with Becky getting her revenge on Shayna at the end of the match was fine, and the crowd seemed to enjoy it, and it just didn't end on the crescendo. It ended kind of like, oh, okay. And as the show was going on, I was thinking, Ronda Rousey. I was thinking, oh, how did I not call Ronda Rousey? They've positioned this triple threat at the end of the show. Becky's involved. How do I not see, with Shayna Baszler also being her training partner, how do I not see, how did I not call in my prediction show Ronda Rousey coming out? And she didn't. She didn't. And I was a bit surprised by that. But maybe she is truly done with WWE. Maybe, I mean, I don't know the status of Ronda Rousey. But I guess I was a bit disappointed that she didn't. But it just ended kind of like, meh. You know, okay. It was okay. So that was Survivor Series in a nutshell. I think that it was overall a good show from a wrestling perspective. Some questionable eliminations. I mean, my God, you know, some people getting eliminated by one DDT or one frog splash or a roll up. I mean, really, Randy Orton gets beat by a roll up, a freaking roll up. I mean, I understand there's a lot of eliminations that they have to come up with. I understand that, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just bitching at this point. So let's move along here to Monday Night Raw. So Seth Rollins berated the Raw roster at the beginning of the show. I enjoyed it. I know that some people didn't. I think that it was a good way to turn Seth. It made sense. And I applaud WWE for going this way, even though I think it was the second best choice. And maybe I'll be proven wrong. But I think it was a good choice, just not the best. So having Seth turn heel and turn on the locker room, awesome. I loved it. And having him basically give them backhanded compliments and also not taking any of the blame for himself. And notice the way he was dressed. Does anybody remember the way he was dressed when he actually turned heel and turned on Dean Ambrose and the infamous chair shot heard round the world when he broke up the Shield? He was wearing the same outfit. On the, I believe it was the SmackDown after. It was either Monday Night Raw or SmackDown after. Same outfit. So it was very poetic and I'm sure done on purpose. Black is a symbol of bad guy. I mean, look at a lot of movies have the bad guy or bad girl wearing black. So it's done throughout theater and movies. Not all the time. But so when I saw him in a black suit at the beginning of Raw, I go, uh-oh. But I loved it. I'm fine with it. And I think I'm on board for the Seth Rollins heel turn. And let's see where it goes. The other thing I really liked, surprisingly, I can't believe I'm saying this, was Rusev defiling the restraining order and attacking Bobby Lashley and continuing even after he's handcuffed. And continuing to kick Lashley, he shoved him with his shoulder off the stage, and then used his foot to throw, drop some scaffolding on him. I love that. And the way Rusev was psychotic about it, this was probably the best thing they've done with this angle yet. I thought it was really the best thing that they've done in, so far. That's not saying a whole lot, but it didn't make me want to turn away and roll my eyes. It was about the physicality, and maybe instead of Lana's poor acting at times, or Vince McMahon's version of a perverted storyline, I didn't get a lot of the talking. It was a lot of Rusev being, really Rusev saving this here, and having him go after Lashley and do the things that you expect him to do in this storyline. And I'm glad they didn't make it a match at Survivor Series. That was a smart move. They know the crowd would have crapped all over it. So having Rusev get arrested here, fine. I think this is okay. Almost good. I just don't know. I mean, this is going to end up in a match at some point, probably TLC. And hopefully it ends there, but they are continuing it. I'd have no problem with this. I really don't. As far as this past week's latest version of this Lana and Rusev and Bobby Lashley storyline. All right. Moving on down the line here from Monday Night Raw. Then we had the Authors of Pain versus Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder. So Akam and Rezar, they beat them. Fine, as you expect. I don't think that Curt Hawkins and Ryder are there for any other reason than to be glorified jobbers, and that's a damn shame. But did you really expect anything else? Really? All right. Then we had, let's see here, Buddy Murphy versus Matt Hardy. Yes, Buddy Murphy versus Matt Hardy. So Aleister Black promised to watch this match closely. Hardy returned to the ring and looked focused, and he took advantage of Murphy's attention being divided. Murphy blocked Black after the match, and by the way, Murphy defeated Matt by pinfall. So, I'm fine with this because right now Aleister Black seems to be a little bit of a lost puppy with no direction. I'm fine with what Aleister Black did here. I think Aleister Black, as I said, he needs a bit of a direction. And I think that having him paired here with Murphy was a good call. I think that Murphy is a guy that is underrated or overlooked. And again, I will say this, like I've said it before, when Buddy Murphy had that match with Roman Reigns months ago on SmackDown, and I said it was one of the best matches I'd seen all year, WWE did nothing with that. Nothing. And other than Roman Reigns showing respect and doing the fist bump as if I tip my cap to you, you get my nod of approval. And I don't need that. That's not enough for me. So having him paired with Aleister Black, I think could pose some really good, in terms of wrestling itself, a good matchup, of which I already can predict before the match even happens or gets announced or this program even really gets going, Aleister Black has to win this. I mean, he's clearly the getting more TV time. I think he's got more of a presence in terms of personality. Still good in the ring too, but this is all about Aleister Black being developed, Aleister Black moving forward, and that's exactly, I think, what's going to happen. All right. Then, as I go down my report here, moving down the line, Ricochet versus Orton versus Drew McIntyre versus Rey Mysterio for the number one contendership for the United States Championship. This was a really good match. Really good. Having all four guys come out, I'm fine with it. It's a bit of a, I guess, cliche to have this happen. How many times do we see guys one after one after one come out and, oh, I'm better. No, I'm better. No, I'm better. And then it eventually ends up in an extremely predictable fatal four-way to, or fatal three, or a triple threat, or whatever, fatal five-way to determine a number one contender. And it's always the last guy that comes out to usually end up winning, because that is the last guy you remember and is typically the one to win the match. And in this case, it was Ray, and that formula continued to follow suit here. And I'm fine with it, and it's interesting when there's no Raw general manager to come out and do this predictable match that the guys just were able to use their brains and do it themselves. It's amazing, isn't it? I'm just so happy there's no authority figures right now, because I could hear Kurt Angle's music playing, or Mick Foley's music playing, or Stephanie McMahon's, or the Authority coming out and making this. Why do it? Clear the guys and gals are policing themselves just fine. So anyway, very good match. I was fine with the way that it ended with Mysterio defeating Ricochet. And again, I don't know why the hell McIntyre has not gotten an opportunity here. He's a podcast all on his own. But Mysterio getting the pinfall to earn the number one contendership made sense. Again, they earned it. That's what's key here. And then immediately following, we got a United States Championship match with AJ Styles and Rey Mysterio. And really, WWE here is using Rey Mysterio to the max here. And I'm fine with that because I don't know how much longer Rey Mysterio actually has. He's not a spring chicken. Rey Mysterio is a guy that is he's a lucha legend. He's a WWE legend. Rey Mysterio is, as much as I want to see Brock Lesnar beat the holy hell out of him, doesn't mean I don't understand the credentials and what he's done for this business and realize the impact he's had on the business. And I applaud WWE for really maximizing their dollars on Rey Mysterio here and taking their investment and making the most of it and realizing that they have an established star that can still perform at a very high level, and had a very good match with Styles. And the key here, though, was the OC getting banned from ringside, and Randy Orton returned to take out Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson before planting Styles with an RKO, which set up Mysterio's win. So what happened was Rey Mysterio, well, after the OC was eliminated or kicked out of ringside, he hit a 619 as Randy Orton's coming out, which timed into a perfect fit to an RKO and then a frog splash, and boom, we have a new United States champion. I think this was, while it was overbooked, again, this is an example of overbooking, I don't think it was overbooking to the point of taking away a lot from the moment. And now we get an Orton AJ Styles program. That's clearly where they're going, as AJ couldn't compose himself and all he could mutter out was Randy Orton in his just flabbergasted interview after his loss. So it's heading to a Randy Orton AJ Styles, which is, I'm fine with it. Randy Orton, again, feels more relevant too, and I'm fine with them using the most they can out of Orton, even if he's not the focus of the company. You can always get a good match out of Orton, so I'm totally fine with this. And suddenly, Orton is now babyface. Yeah, Orton is now a babyface as he flips and flops and flips and flops. Whatever. I have just given up on Randy Orton, whether he's heel or babyface. To me, he's always babyface because he's so magnetic, and his RKO is so damn over that I don't care what he's doing. He's just, to me, the babyface all the time. All right. Then we got Asuka and Charlotte Flair. Charlotte Flair, again, I enjoyed this too because, honestly, I don't have a lot that was terrible about Monday Night Raw. This was a decent Raw, and particularly here with Asuka defeating Charlotte by pinfall here. So Asuka continues to use her spray, whatever it may be, her green mist to attack and to cheat to win. And that's fine with me. And it's interesting, though, that how whatever substance this is, which is clearly food coloring and water, whatever. But Charlotte said in an interview before the match that this green mist is painful and it burns your eyes and it's dangerous, whatever. And yet when it happens and gets rolled up and then the referees notice, they don't call the medical staff. They don't ask anyone to come down and wash your eyes out. The referee is just like, hey, you want to help out of the ring? I mean, if it's such a dangerous substance, wouldn't you have the medical staff out there? At least with towels and water and, not carting her away, but something. But the referee's just casually like, come on, I'll help you out. And Charlotte's refusing. I mean, so anyway, the match itself was good, and I'm looking forward to an Asuka-Charlotte program. I also appreciate the fact that Charlotte brought up how she beat Asuka for the SmackDown Women's Championship last spring. because I have harped on that for months since it happened. I said, why the hell did it happen? Nobody explained it. Asuka didn't seem to care. There was no rematch. It was just a way to get Charlotte into the main event and have a winner-take-all, biggest it can possibly be, even if it doesn't make sense, match. All right. Well, now I'm starting to rant. But overall, I like this program. I like Asuka as a heel using her mist. Charlotte as a babyface, it's not my favorite, but she can do it, and I'm fine with it. This is a match that a program we haven't seen in a while, so let's do it. Let's do it. I'm on board. Rowan continued with his covered, his covered cage with nothing. I don't know, whatever. It was just Rowan continuing to be on TV as whatever. I mean, I don't even have much to say about this, and the only hook is what's under the cage or what's under the cloth, what's in the cage. That's it. All right. Then we had Kevin Owens versus Seth Rollins. And I should have mentioned, Kevin Owens ended up stunning Seth Rollins at the very beginning of the show. And the crowd loved it. I liked it. And I'm fine with this program, too, especially this match, which I think was done very well. Rollins ended up getting a stunner. And then Kevin Owens couldn't capitalize. And that's when we saw Akam and Rezar come out. And Kevin Owens, though, to Akam and Rezar's credit, they didn't attack Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens attacked them, and then they responded. So that was a interesting note. Instead of, you know, I guess Kevin Owens, you could just say in his defense, well, they were clearly going to attack him. You might as well take the first shot. But you don't know that. They were standing and almost trying to decide what they wanted to do. So having Kevin Owens take the first strike, maybe he dug his own grave. Nonetheless, I still think it's a good pairing for Seth, as we will see down the line here. Very good pairing. I like all three men together. It just feels... I like the feeling right now of those three. So, overall, a good Monday Night Raw. In the main event, though, having Seth or Kevin Owens win or lose clean is not what you wanted to do there. And I'm fine with neither man losing or winning clean, because right now it's really a program that needs to build, and you don't want a clean finish. You need to add elements before you get a clean finish. And you need to get heat on Rollins, which is what's going to happen here. And you need to build Kevin Owens, and you need to, there's a whole bunch of things you need to add before you get to the final chapter. And I'm fine with it. So I like the build there. Really, I think an overall good to very good Raw. I know the crowd was chanting BS, but they can't get a clean finish for everything. Oh, Walter was the other. That's the one thing I was going to say. Walter, when he got eliminated as the very first elimination in the men's match at Survivor Series. Yeah, I didn't understand that either. And that was BS. That made no sense. And he got eliminated quickly and is the NXT UK champion. Imagine if they were in, like, London or something and that happened. Oh, my God. People would have been walking out, rioting. The streets would have been a mess. Cars overturned, on fire. So, anyway. I enjoyed this week of wrestling as much as I am, I may critique and rant about things. I am so happy Survivor Series brand supremacy garbage is over, but I enjoyed the actual matches themselves. The competitors, the athletes themselves saved the Survivor Series from being a bomb. I think it was well done in terms of the performances and effort. That's what saved this pay-per-view. Outside of those just sometimes head-scratching decisions by WWE, but Raw, I think, was a turn in the right direction. As we head towards TLC, there's only a few weeks until TLC, and then we'll be right into the road to WrestleMania as we head towards Rumble. So it's right around the corner, guys. It's right around the corner on this Thanksgiving week. So, all right. Well, I think I'll stop there, and I want to thank you guys for listening. Those of you listening live, I know there are some of you listening live. Thank you so much for joining me on this Thanksgiving week, and I'll be back tomorrow night for your wrestling nostalgia, and then on Saturday for your week in review And also, of course, your NXT and AEW reviews will be coming Thursday and Friday as well. So, as always, a lot of content to come. And thank you guys for listening. And I will be back. I was going to say Happy Thanksgiving, but I'll be back tomorrow to say all that. So, as always, head on over to the website. It's a little bit messed up right now. As I said, WWEpodcast.com, as well as head on over to Patreon.com/WWEpodcast if you want an ad-free experience. Can get on the show and lots of other goodies, and rate and review me and subscribe anywhere that podcasts are available. So guys, as always, thanks so much. I'll talk to you next time.